This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
Why, happy holidays. This is Mark Lintonmeyer, your festive aperture on philosophy.
Ho, ho, ho! We hope all of your meals are delicious and your mashed potatoes are buttery. This is Mary. I am bringing the improvisational energy, and we are joined today by...
Lawrence Ware, and I was not told to come up with something clever. So I am here, and I am a black man coming to your Christmas day. Shocker! Surprising, you weren't expecting this to happen.
You got your improvisational warm-up right away, Lawrence. We got you right in there.
I just noticed your headphones. Your headphones are delightful. I like your headphones quite a bit.
Aren't they fun?
I mean, I've been on here before. I should have known. But no, I did not have anything clever. So, hi, guys. I'm here.
But guess what, Lawrence?
What's that?
You are the clever. So, whatever you say and whatever you do will be clever because it comes from you.
I think that is absolutely not true. But thank you so much. That is very kind. Very kind, but it's not true.
So should we act out a modern rendition of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, the 1967
okay,
film?
Okay, that's too far. Okay. Let's go ahead and stop there. Let's go.
I never saw it, so I don't know.
Let's just stop. Let's stop.
I think he's a lovely man, darling. He's very intelligent. He's very dashing and handsome. And darling, you can marry whoever you want just as long as my baby's happy.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so think of Get Out, but like 50 years before. Like that is exactly what Guess Who's Coming Home to Dinner is.
Well, Lawrence, I never thought of it till you said it, but it holy shit is.
It is.
Oh my gosh.
That's exactly what it is.
Oh my gosh, I'm crying.
Minus the weird stuff at the end with, you know, swapping brains and all that kind of stuff.
Oh my gosh, you're
minus
so
that,
right.
But well, it's Get Out. That's exactly what that movie is. But it's a great film. It's really fun. I enjoyed the film, but it's Get Out.
Is it a Christmas tradition?
No, it's not a Christmas tradition.
I don't know what holiday he's coming home for dinner.
Mary, do you know what holiday he's coming home? It might be Christmas. Is it Christmas? I don't think it's Christmas.
What question's being asked of me?
Okay, so when Sidney Poitier shows up, what holiday is it?
It's like summer or something, because I remember it's all like, it's been so long since I've seen it, but I don't think that it's Christmas.
It's
I don't remember
Christmas.
There being snow. I don't think it's Christmas.
Well, I remember them going to like the drive-in movie or something at some point in the film. So that's not a Christmas movie. I don't think it is.
According to the status and the hierarchical structure and everything that they set up in the film, it doesn't make sense to me that their daughter would have felt safe and appropriate bringing him to their home.
Probably right.
Because I would imagine in that waspy, at the high wasp of that family, that Christmas was too sacred to introduce such a daring feat of love.
Yes. Yes.
I'm finding the most polite ways to say it.
But honestly, that is a wonderful double feature. So anyone who's watching, who's listening, I would encourage you to watch Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And then watch Get Out, and it's a great double feature. Wonderful.
Lawrence, please believe I'm adding that to my list. I'm a big film nut. I love film so much. And I love being able to see, and also as an improviser and satirist, like seeing source material and how source material is, like the artist sees it. Like Jordan Peele saw that movie, I'm sure, and was like, well, shit, I've got some things to say about that.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, so how things are digested, absorbed, recycled, and that, and how that storytelling around the fire, that like oral tradition, how it keeps growing and blooming is really sexy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, film theory is what I do. It's part of what I teach. I'm a film critic, as Mark knows. So yeah, this is what I do. I'm sorry, Mark. I didn't mean to derail your thing with like,
there is no rail.
Deep truths.
We're railless.
About film. We're right on time there, right on schedule.
Well, Lawrence, okay, my question then, can you pinpoint the moment that made you feel the spark of like, I'm going to give people my unsolicited opinion about movies?
Honestly, I have no idea where that came from. I'm being so sincere. It's a mixture of, honestly, Mark plays a big role in it. Mark doesn't know this, but he's had a significant impact on my life.
Oh, Mark.
Because Mark, I know this is, we're having a kumbaya moment. I've known Mark for, has it been 10 years now? More than 10 years? It's been a long time.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Thank you for that deep that heartfelt, holy shit, Mark, what are you doing?
I'm Googling when your first appearance was. That's what I'm doing.
I thought we were better than this. Anyway, Mark introduced me to the podcast world. He brought me on to Harsh Examine Life, and that kind of sparked within me the interest in doing this in some kind of way. And then I discovered by happenstance that I was a good writer. I had no idea that I was. I mean, I knew I could do the academic stuff, but I didn't know that I could write for like the public. And so I just accidentally wrote a review of a film and it was published in Slate.
Whoopsie.
And then from there, it went to the New York Times. And then from there, kind of went on. And so I had no planning on this. And I discovered that I had weird takes that other people didn't have. So, like, for example, I have this, like, idea of what makes a Black movie. And my contention is that many Black movies are not genuinely Black movies. Because for me, for a movie to be Black, quote-unquote Black, it needs to have Black director, Black writer, Black producers, all that kind of stuff. And The Color Purple, for example, a loved, beloved Black film, I don't think it's Black. It's white people producing it, white people directing it. Anyway, so I discovered that I had these weird takes. And then I had a decent ability to write, put those things together, and here I am, film critic.
Lawrence, I love that. And that makes me think of last night I was teaching an improv class with the Second City.
Holy shit. You just dropped that? You just, it's no big deal. I was just chilling with Second City. It's not a big deal at all. It's not that, it's like a legendary.
It's just something I've hustled for my whole life.
Yeah, it's not like it's legendary. It's fine. Keep going though.
Bless you. Bless you. Bless you. People either know or they don't. So I don't know. It's just part of who I am. It's just part of my awesome.
Second City. It's not like they have like an esteemed group of individuals who come from
Thank
that.
You.
No big deal.
Thank
no big
you,
deal.
Sir.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you, sir. So I.
Can I borrow $5 though? Because I'm sure you're getting paid a lot of money to do that.
That's for another podcast. Okay. That's for another podcast. But I said a coaching phrase that I've never said before that I really loved. And it was discover what is discovering you. Be in discovery of what is discovering you. So instead of continuing to search for the best idea, the next idea, discover what shows up to you. So what you just described sounds like that, is like you were able to put the inventory of evidence together and watch it unfurl and unfold through. Of course, it took work for you to get there, right? It's not, we're not saying it just like falls from the sky, but like when you do that, like discover what's discovering you, I feel like it allows you to be more authentic with yourself.
No, I think that's good. I never thought to put it in that kind of frame, but that frame works. That's the reason why you're at the legendary Second City. And you're not just like a person who's there. You're teaching people,
yeah,
which means that you are pretty impressive and getting paid the big bucks. And is Mark even here? Is Mark even here? Where is Mark? Where is he?
So we've had a few folks on who have various sorts of hustles in terms of tutoring people one on one. That I
so you're calling me? You saying I hustle? You're demeaning what I do at a university and saying that I'm hustling.
I am not saying that. I'm asking about your, you know, one thing I don't think I've ever talked to you about is when you, back when you were preaching, were you also being a one-on-one counselor to people in the church who would come to you with their issues?
Mm-hmm. That huff with that, yeah. Yeah.
Did that not seem your strong point? You're not doing that now, right?
Well, I kind of am and I kind of not. Okay, so this leads into a whole discussion. I don't know if you want to get into the theology stuff, man, with me. Like, this leads into a whole discussion about why, and I only recently left the church. Like, I only, like.
It's the Christmas episode. This is the perfect time.
The perfect time to talk about why
you leave Christianity. The time to leave the church is Christmas.
It's the time to do it. Okay, so I wrote a piece back in 2017 that went unbelievably viral, like legitimately viral on the New York Times about why I left the Southern Baptist Convention, and it had to do with the racism that I saw there and all that kind of stuff. And it went crazy viral. It was all over the place. Like, I got death threats, everything. All right. So it went viral.
Good job.
I tried. That is my goal in life. I like to get death threats. That's what I want.
Well, yes. You've said my podcast, appearing on my podcast, has gotten you death threats, or at least mean emails. Maybe not death threats, because who's going to...
Do you have a tally of death threats?
No,
you need
I have
a tally or something.
I have a thing that I keep about a KKK person wrote me a letter. Anyway, it's not that big of a deal. It happens more often than you would like to think. Anyway, but nevertheless...
I'm not okay with any of that.
It's my life, man. Like, I don't know. If you're a Black person out there, like, writing and intelligent and saying things that white people don't like to listen, don't like to hear, It happens, man. Like I even wrote something at a black publication and I got death threats from white people. I don't know how to hide. Anyway, but the point is, so I wrote that piece and I left the Southern Baptist Convention, but I was still very uncomfortable with like the homophobia that I was seeing and a lot of other stuff that I just wasn't comfortable with. And it took me a longer time to leave the black church because the black church has been like the place that black people were able to kind of get free, if you will, right? Like all the movements for civil rights had some kind of tentacles to the black church. And so I was very hesitant to leave it, but it's just the homophobia got to be too much. I really had issues with it. And so I pivoted away from doing, so this is back to your question, Mark, away from doing like the traditional counseling. And I now counsel quite a few people who are LGBTQ, but still want to be in the church and still want to like feel as though God loves them and all that kind of stuff. And so I still do counseling. I just have pivoted who I counsel now. So I'm still out there, man. I don't do it in any kind of particular church. But if someone comes to me and says, hey, I'm struggling with something, does God love me? Should I kill myself? Like, these are all questions I've had to deal with. I've figured out a way to kind of talk to people about those issues from a place where, one, God loves them, and two, God made them who they are. So I've found a way to kind of do that. So that's what I do now. You look so much more impressed, Mary, with what I'm doing. It's not that impressive. I promise you it's not.
Well, excuse you. I am allowed to be impressed if I choose to be impressed. You don't get to choose how I unwrap the gift that you gave me and how I play with it.
I didn't give you
a gift.
Thank
you very much.
If you unwrap that gift, there will be poop inside. There will be poop inside. It's welcome.
But I mean, it's a really great point, though. Like, in my opinion, from listening to what you shared from your heart with your words, that was a gift to me. So we get to consider the things that we say and the things that we do. And I'm coming here, I'm in the improvisational pillar. Mm-hmm. And in a scene, we endeavor everything that is said, everything that is done, we get to treat it like it's the best gift we've ever received. Because that imbues it with like really like powerful energy to keep the momentum moving.
Right.
So all sarcasm aside, fuck you. I like the gift.
Okay? Oh, okay. Well, you can have it.
I don't need the gift receipt. I don't even care if it's poop. I'll put it in my garden.
You didn't have to cuss at me. I feel, are you cussing at me because I'm a black person? Is that what's going on here? That you are racially letting out the anger that you have?
She's establishing she's setting up a meme. I mean, this should be a thank you card. Fuck you, I like the gift. And then you give it.
Honestly, that's not bad, actually. It's actually not bad at all. Yes.
Actually, that's a great card. That's actually really funny.
I would love to get
fuck
a gift.
Fuck you, I like the gift. And then it's just like blank inside. Or what would the message? So what would it look like? Would it be like, would like the picture on the front be someone like really like cranky? And then inside the language is like, fuck you, I like the gift. And then you write like, love, Paul.
Yeah. Sounds like something like that. Yeah.
Thank you for letting me make my point.
It was a good point.
I feel I should share the story of my orphan greeting card that sometimes I get greeting cards at the pet food store. Because they have nice animal pictures. And it's a hilarious kitty with his hair being blown up by a vent. But the message inside is like, venting, it's cheaper than therapy.
All right, orphans, gather round. I've turned the stove on extra hot so that you may warm yourself this evening. I know that your fingers are raw and cold from coming up with all of our greeting cards. But how are we going to keep the orphanage afloat unless we have your beautiful, whimsical quips that come from a place of dear, deep sadness?
Wow.
I've been writing some cards that I just don't know possibly what situations they would be used in. Is that okay?
Well, Paul, get on with it. What do you have for Madame Trelawney?
I have one here that says, I heard you got me a gift, and that's all. Is that okay?
No, it's not okay. That's not okay.
No, Terrence. You are our eldest, sassiest orphan, and I love how you keep the little ones in line.
Terrence, what do you have for us? Terrence is a black name. Oh, you're talking to me? Terrence, holy shit! You're talking to
Terrence,
me!
Terrence! Terrence, we always have this conversation. You are the token... Excuse me. You are the only black child in the orphanage.
No, token is accurate. Token is accurate.
You are the token. That's why you have that gold-gilded star brooch that I gave you, because I want you to know that you are the best.
Oh, thank you so much.
So, what greeting card sayings do you have for our ho-ho holiday season?
Yeah, let's hear your go. You think yours is so much better. Let's hear it.
Channel your blackness, Terrence.
Oh, thank you. I recently read the Black Panther Manifesto, And I have decided to rebel against this whole thing because it feels too close to slavery. I'm sorry. I'm not participating anymore.
I don't mind you having your Black Panther parties, but do clean up after. Do clean. All right, then, children. If we don't have any more greeting cards.
I have another one. Can I show you this one? It's just,
yes, please do. I'm wildly disappointed.
On the front are some arrows that are going in different directions.
Yes, they're squiggly. They're very lovely.
And then you open it and it says, where's that? Can you think of a use for that one? Is there a holiday? Where's that? I mean, it could really get people thinking.
Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day sounds like a good one because love's like that. Yeah, I think that's a good
Children, it's time for my afternoon brandy at 11 o'clock. Just don't burn the orphanage down. I can't have another fire.
11 a.m. for a brandy? That seems a little early. It's not afternoon.
Well, have you listened to yourself, young Terrence?
Yes, I have. And I think that instead of brandy, you should maybe smoke a joint. Maybe that might be a little better for you.
The devil's seagrass?
Yes, absolutely.
Not in this house.
I saw you smoking it last night. I don't know what you're talking about.
I was smoking a little bit, and that's why I came up with this card that it has a picture of a peacock, and you open it, and it just says, beak? Question mark?
Deep, man. That's deep.
You think that, can you think of a use for that one?
That's deep. That's deep.
Of all the times to have a barren womb, this is the time that I'm the most regretful.
Oh, my God.
And scene. Right. And scene.
Holy that got dark as hell. What the? A barren womb? Holy shit.
But here's the thing about improv, though, is I got inspired by the card piece, right? And Mark, mm-hmm. I know Mark was about to like do something else, but he saw me launch into an improv scene. So he was like, go forth and improv scene. Mm-hmm. And so I got that initial calling to be like, oh, orphan greeting card is what I was going off of, right? Mm. And then so now we're building in the sandbox together, making up rules in this world that has not existed previously. So I started it all jolly, but after all the gifts are given of the inventory of what you and Mark had to say, it was going down the dark road. So
right.
Far be it from me to deny it where it wants to go, and it wants to go to darkness. So all right, everybody, grab your bags. We're going to darkness.
That's Mark's doing. Mark is good for going dark on a random topic. That's Mark.
Let's do our ad break. It's time to talk about Rula. Are the holidays getting you down? Is life in general getting you down? Maybe it's time at last to try therapy. Our sponsor, Rula, provides an easy way to do that. You just go to their website, answer some questions. It will connect you with one of their over 15,000 therapists and psychiatrists nationwide. You'll schedule your appointment right there in the app. Maybe as soon as tomorrow, you will have your session over the internet from the privacy of your own home. And best of all, Rula partners with most major insurance plans. So if you have insurance, the average copay is going to be $15 per session. But depending on your benefits, the copay could be zero. And Rula is committed to supporting you and staying with you every step of the way in your mental health journey. If you're having an issue with your therapist, they're going to fix that. You're going to monitor your progress. They're going to help with medication management. Listen, when I was a younger person, man, I should have been getting therapy. But the cost, the inconvenience, really the shame kept me just coping on my own. Don't do that. Thousands have already trusted Rula to support them on their journey toward improved mental health and overall well-being. Head on over to Rula.com/improv to get started today. After you sign up, they ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them our show sent you. Go to Rula.com/improv and take the first step toward better mental health today. You deserve quality care from someone who cares. I would like to tell you about Masterclass. Masterclass is a website. It's an app which you can experience from your phone, from your TV. Treat it like a podcast or a totally immersive experience. It collects over 200 classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more, like Aaron Sorkin on screenwriting, James Cameron on filmmaking, the Duffer Brothers on developing an original TV series, Judd Apatow on comedy, Martin Scorsese, David Lynch, Ron Howard, Samuel L. Jackson. The list goes on. But I decided this time to turn left and check out Spice Up Your Life with the Art of Sex Appeal by author and sexologist Shan Boodram. Shan teaches you how to discover your turn-on triggers, explore solo play, and have better, hotter, more passionate sex. So there's a little holiday assignment for you, maybe something to highlight as you use this as a last-minute gift. Seriously, I've gotten a lot out of Masterclass classes over the years. There's something that every member of your family will enjoy. Plans start at $10 a month, billed annually, and there is no risk. Every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee.
See for yourself why one MasterClass member says, this is by far the best money I've spent in a long while. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head to masterclass.com/improv for the current offer. That's 50% off at masterclass.com/improv. Masterclass.com/improv.
So I was thinking out of that, you know, the contrast between things transmitted, knowledge transmitted via books, via things that are dead, as opposed to you explaining to someone in a counseling session or Mary explaining to somebody why God and or the gods of improv love them, that it's just a fundamentally different thing. That it seems like I've spent 3 hours in the last 3 weeks on my Close Reads podcast just reading through with Wes a little bit of Hegel's Phenomenology, which is hilarious. Ooh. That we're following this 20-something-year-old around by the nose trying to interpret his bullshit, mm-hmm. and having a lot of fun doing it. No chance any real practical immediate thing is going to come out of it. You got to think that if you actually were sitting down with this guy who I'm sure was a genius, that, you know, there would be something more tailored to what I needed at the time, as opposed to this extreme. And that's an extreme case, but all philosophy and really all written work suffers from this disconnect between whatever its intended meaning might have been and what you get out of it.
For sure.
I don't know if I agree with that, Mark. I mean, I think that there are certain texts, particularly dry, boring-ass philosophical texts, that suffer from that. I mean, but there are many texts that are very vibrant and alive bell hooks, just a whole bunch of really vibrant and alive books, 100 Years of Solitude, something like that. I mean, so I don't know if I necessarily agree with you on that point. I think that there are books that do suffer from that, and I think philosophy is particularly susceptible to that, but I wouldn't say all.
Well, it was more a question.
There we go.
The things that you're mentioning are sort of like, they're pieces of art that's sort of like somebody whispering mm-hmm. in your ear, telling you this intimate story, you know, 100 Years of Solitude. They're literally reporting the thoughts of somebody. Now, there's still a disconnect between this is out there, but hopefully if it's long enough, it's not just like something they found on a hieroglyphic with no context, and we got to just kind of guess what it is, but you're going to be drawn into this person's world. So is there an advantage, I'm asking both of you, still to, would you rather have written a corpus of books that is appreciated by people, or would you rather be doing speaking tours and better one-on-one counseling? Would that be a better way? What we're doing here today, is this a better way of getting information across?
My answer is yes.
Both
have a lot of value because we're endeavoring to communicate to people across all different swaths of age, experience, etc. So different people need different things in order to be able to resonate with the work. So I think it's all important and I want it all.
Actually, you know, I kind of agree with Mary, believe it or not. I mean, not everyone has this ability to both simultaneously write well and be good, like to present and speak and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. If a person is really good on one, but not so good on the other, they should focus on what they do very, very well. But the ideal for me would be to do both, honestly, because I think that the spoken word and all that kind of stuff is very immediate. It does a really good job in the moment. But I do think that there's something about writing a book and having posterity and having that influence people that you will never meet. You'll be long dead and that book will always be there kind of influencing people. And so I do think that there's something to be said between two. Now, Mark, if you're holding my feet to the fire and forcing me to choose, like I am an orphan who you randomly picked up and you're now treating me like I am trapped in a saw-like tortured situation.
Sit on my lap, young Lawrence.
It's all up to perspective.
If you're forcing me, then I'm probably going to say books. Even though it won't be as good of a communication kind of thing. But even in the spoken word, you can oftentimes, like, are we really sure Hitler was a bad guy? Like, I mean, the reality is,
I am.
Yeah, he was definitely a bad guy. But the point is, maybe he's that's probably a bad example. But the point is, nevertheless, maybe there's a disconnect between the ideas and how they're being expressed.
I see what you're saying.
Although I don't think there's any kind of disconnect whatsoever. But the point, nevertheless, though, oftentimes ideas, we have them in our head and when we try to communicate them, we don't communicate them well, even in the spoken word, even when it comes to counseling and in the spoken medium. And so I would say probably books more than likely. And go ahead and feel free to delete that Hitler reference because it probably doesn't work well. And me and Kanye West will be treated very similar very soon if you don't delete that.
There's something I'd love to circle back to about the counseling work that you do. And what I'm hearing in that is that a lot of the work is about reminding people that they have power, like giving them permission to know power and love themselves. Because I was raised Irish Catholic, very Irish family, very Catholic. I was the cantor in church. I sang in the choir. My mom was a lector. Like, we were in it. And while all of that was happening and I was, you know, the CDC and confirmation and like the whole schlamackle, there would be points where I never resonated with the like, I am meek and lesser and oh, like permission for, like, please grant me permission to be glorious in your eyes. Like, that never really resonated with me. I never enjoyed that like powerless piece. And I think that really like gets in people's brains, right? Like, it really is like, oh, I am meek and I am lesser than, and I need you to approve of me.
95% of my job is really trying to unlearn people of that, right? Try to take that out of people's minds and let them know that God is not asking you to be meek and mild, and God is not asking you, like, the whole humility piece has been really misunderstood. Like, yes, you can be humble, but you can simultaneously be humble and be sure of yourself, and you can be humble and, you know, say that I'm sure about this part of who I am and all kind of stuff. You know, I never really bought that the whole humility is all about like debasing yourself and making yourself feel as though you're not
debasing
worthy.
That's the word, you know? Yeah.
The first probably 10 sessions I do with a person is talking to them about how they are worthy and how they're okay, right? And that is a big thing, because when it comes to Christianity, it has been so deeply misunderstood that in order to be Christ-like, it means to not be who you are and not, you know your strengths and be willing to put up with anything. I mean, I'm not going to say any names, but it reminds me of a woman who I had to have some counseling with, man, many years ago, 5-7 years ago, who was in a relationship, was not being treated well, and didn't feel as though she was able to leave. And I had to let her know, you are able to leave. It's okay. God will still love you. You're okay. But so many people have kind of bought into that to such a degree that they don't feel comfortable sometimes being who they are, taking back their own strengths and whatnot.
I'm so happy that people have access to someone like you to help, like, be their sentinel through that work, because you can't do the work for them, but you can stand there and be like, you actually have power. You are actually loved, and you are made in the divine likeness of a loving God. Like, hey, I'm just here to remind you, you choose your own adventure, but I'm here to like hold the torch and be like, look at the fire. It's bright.
Although simultaneously, I'm also struggling with my belief in God. So that's also a thing that's happening simultaneously, because I believe in the divine. I'm just not sure that that whole Christianity, I don't think they have the total story 100%. I'm very much comfortable with people who are Islamic, people who are Buddhist, people who are very different, people who are atheists, whatever. I'm even comfortable with Mark. I'm comfortable with people who are just kind of different. And the reality, therefore, is that I want to make room for everyone at the table, and not saying that my way of doing things is the only right way to doing things. But I will say it was a journey to get here. Like, it was a 40-year journey to get to this point. Because when I was younger, man, you guys would not recognize me at all. I was very, very different. But it took a long time to get here. And honestly, Mark was a step along the way.
Mark was the spark.
He was not the spark, but he was sparking. And that Jesus podcast that we did two podcasts. We did a Jesus podcast, and then we did a...
Well, there was Recur.
Both of those podcasts, those were really kind of influential, very important steps for me to really start going in a different direction. Mark didn't know he had that kind of influence on me, but he did.
So the irony here is I'm starting here, this journey with Mary, and it's very self-consciously, like, I'm going to teach her something, she's going to teach me something. That's the format of the show. But, I mean, Partially Examined Life, we're all fellow learners, so we're just trying to figure out the stuff. But I never take it upon myself with any of my co-hosts, certainly not in our Pretty Much Pop show, to, like, I'm going to, over time, train you to be a different kind of person.
Teach you. Yeah. No, you don't.
In fact, we brought you in because I didn't know anybody else offhand that, you know, had preached Jesus's parables that could discuss that with us. And if the result of that is that we made you read some heretical stuff that made the whole thing less divine and made you wander from your chosen calling, That certainly was not the intent.
Well, I mean, it wasn't the intent, but it didn't do all that. But it was definitely a step on the path of me having conversations that let me know it was okay to have those conversations with other individuals. And then I discovered that there was communities of people who were trying to have these conversations, and I just kind of found them. So this was a step on the path, but it was an important step. Because before this, I really weren't having those kind of conversations, really, not with people, with myself. Yes, me and my imaginary friend here, Leroy Jenkins, we were having these kind of conversations.
Hey, I'm right here. Hey, I didn't know you were going to ask me to come in. What are we talking about?
We were talking about how we were going back and forth on, okay, Leroy Jenkins is way cooler than that. I need you to kind of get it together. Don't embarrass me in front of all these people. Like, when I introduce you to people, I need you to be cool. All right? So get that together.
Yeah, dude. I'm so sorry. I was bringing the nerd energy because let me drop down. Let me drop down.
Yeah.
Drop
and
down.
So we were having conversations about God. And
yeah. Yeah.
We figured it out. We figured it out.
Lawrence, I got something I got chit chat with you about.
What's that? What's up?
So a couple times when you think you're talking to me, I'm actually out shooting pool. So
who am I talking to?
Well, his name's Snuffles.
Snuffles?
So your imaginary friend swaps out for a different imaginary friend without your knowledge.
I thought I had only one imaginary friend. This is news to me.
Yeah, Snuffles.
Yeah.
Snuffles, you look confused. Do you know who you are, dude?
Oh, I did realize that it was time for me to sub in. Usually you go play pool when I sub in.
I'm sorry. I didn't send an agenda for this meeting. I'm like, I'm fucking up, man. I'm sorry. Yeah, dude, so this is awkward.
You get the urge to play pool, and then suddenly, like, I'm being told about how Paul of Tarsus actually was not all that. I thought, and this is news to me, and I'm not sure what to say back, so I kind of just nod and like, and I kind of just let Lawrence go.
Wait, Snuffles, who the fuck is Paul of Tarsus? Who is that dude?
Okay, it was Saul of Tarsus who became just Paul. He wasn't of Tarsus anymore. Is that?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Is that what his name was? I don't know. Was his name Paul of Saul of Tarsus? I just thought his name was Saul and Paul. I know the Tarsus part.
I'm beginning to doubt your bona fides as the biblical expert.
I never said I was a biblical expert. I'm literally walking away from the church. I am not a biblical expert. Now, I might be a theologian adjacent person. No, I know who you're talking about. We don't call him Paul of Tarsus. We call him Saul of Tarsus. But once he changed his name from Saul to Paul, I don't even know if anyone called it.
He's just called simply Paul.
Yeah, Paul. St. Paul. The evangelist.
I think I'm going to head to the pool hall. I got to go. I'm tapping out. I'm going to leave you with Snuffles. The shark is calling. I got to go.
The shark? The pool shark? What do you mean the shark? Is Jaws at the
I was
pool
trying
house?
To make some kind of a shark. Because my brain was like, and this is another improv related thing, right? So it's like you get something and then you deal with adjacent thoughts. Like, if this is true, then what else is true? Like, so it's like the lighter flicked on pool. So my brain, while I'm talking, my brain is like, what are my associations with pool? And like, I'm seeing all these associations and pool shark came to mind. So instead of me searching for another reference, I went with that one and I'm going to make it make sense. And then it's not about me anymore because I delivered it and you can either like it or not. That's not my problem. But I'm staying authentic to adjacency. Yeah.
Thank you for being who you are. Mark, I had to double check that. It's Saul of Tarsus. And once he became Paul, he's now known as St. Paul, Paul the Apostle. So yeah, I had to double check that to make sure that I was not messing up. So otherwise, what I'm saying is I'm the shit. I'm really good at what I do. Boom shakalaka.
Okay, I just have to say, so I have to throw my head back every time I laugh because I've got this like trumpet of a laugh and I don't want to keep blasting the audio. So if anyone's watching this video, it's pretty funny because I have to like, it's like a force and I have to like shoot it somewhere else so it doesn't blast your ears.
That is making me very unhappy because I thought that you were doing that because I was so incredibly funny that it made you do that. But now I'm learning that you just randomly do that and it has nothing to do with me. And now I think less of myself.
Hold, please. It actually does have something to do with you because I would not laugh like that unless something happened that I found funny that caused that kinesthetic response of laughter.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
But okay. if I watch this again and you do that again, I'm going to feel bad. I'm going to feel bad about myself.
Well, that's your choice. You can choose to feel bad if you want to, which is, here's the thing that loops back to the counseling. It's like part of where I'm at in my life right now is I'm like, choose your own adventure. You can choose to feel guilty and shameful, or you can choose to let it go and know that growth and change are the only constants. So if you want to feel bad, great. Have fun.
So it's not your fault that I'm feeling bad. It's my fault that I'm feeling bad. So no matter what you do, it's my fault that I'm feeling bad. So if you slap me and I feel bad, it's not you who did anything. It's me who feels bad. And I think that that might not be a good way to kind of live your life.
It's all your fault.
That is Zen Master instruction. Slap. Now you are enlightened.
That'll be $10,000.
That sounds like the dude from Kill Bill Volume 1, the guy who was training her. That sounds like something that he would have done.
Oh, yeah. Pai Mei is his name.
Seriously? Was that really? Wait. Was that really his name, Mary?
Yes, Pai Mei. It was the name of her instructor.
How do you know that?
I know that because if we were listening to previous inventory, you will know that I am also a film buff.
You're a film buff, but I didn't know that you would know that regular, that random reference like that.
Well, I did some theater work in St. Petersburg, Russia, and our teacher was a student of Stanislavski. Older than dirt.
Whoa.
Absolutely terrifying. Amazing man, Alexander Anisimov. And myself and like five other American girls got invited to go over to do some continued work with them. And I referred to him as the Russian Pai Mei because that's like 100% what he was. Like, dude was totally terrifying. He would like slap us. Like, anyone out there who's ever done like Russian dance or theater training knows that like it's next level.
I love how you just randomly dropping that you work at Second City and then randomly dropping that you went to Petersburg, St. Petersburg, excuse me, Russia. No big deal. It's not like I'm in the presence of greatness. It's all good.
This is just how you get to know people. This is the one-on-one. This is that connection.
Wait, I want to circle back with this to that humility piece because I've worked for a very long time to dissolve the Catholic guilt and be able to be confident sharing my story and my experience, right? And allowing myself to exist in both worlds of humility and prowess, and that it's possible to do both and have both.
I mean, honestly, and this Excuse is no me. Bullshit. I'm, yeah, stop burping on camera.
I'm so sorry.
Did you really burp? I was joking.
I really did burp. I'm so sorry.
But legitimately, I'm being dead serious here. All jokes aside, you're really impressive and you're not making a big deal of it. Good job. I'm very proud.
I thank you.
I'm very happy. And Mark, I think she should come on a Pretty Much Pop. I like her a lot.
Oh, I've been verified, certified.
Make that happen.
It'll happen when we do something that she's especially excited about, which might be soon. We'll talk about it.
Ho-ho.
Being in a place of humility and a place of prowess, I feel like my, as a philosopher, is instead of trying to grasp both those things, I'm in neither. That we retreat to the sort of objective point of view of, I know what my strengths and weaknesses are. You have to believe in what you're doing enough to keep doing it. But like the whole idea of self-esteem seems sort of just a mistake. Like, you're in your body. You don't have to like rate it at all.
Mm.
You don't have to say, I'm good enough to go. Like, that's something you apply to, I'm going to eat this thing. Is this yummy enough for me to eat? I'm going to listen to this music. Is this good? And even with music, I'm kind of like, well, it exists. Let me just see what it has to say. And I'm not so judgy about anything. That's not the primary way of approaching things, is putting it on some sort of rating scale. So I certainly don't have to put myself on a rating scale.
That is primarily how I exist in the world, man. I rate movies, I rate music, I rate people, I rate everything.
Well, and that's a point of contention on Pretty Much Pop.
It is.
That you're like, well, do you like it? Is this a recommendation or is this not a recommendation? Like, you know, it was interesting.
I mean, people come to the podcast to hear our recommendations. We're going to cheat them if we don't give it to them. Bottom line is that I completely disagree with you. I think that we should be rating some things. We probably shouldn't rate people, but we should rate art. Like, no one makes art in hopes that it's not good. And the only way to know that it's good is for someone to rate it highly.
And the purpose of art is to make people think and feel. And it's not going to resonate with everyone the same way. And that's not the point. It's, you don't want everyone to love it. You want everyone to be affected by it. And everyone is affected in different ways.
Man, that's too willy-nilly. I mean, there are great films, and there's a reason why they're great. Like, don't get me on this high horse. Like, this is the reason why I go...
You're getting yourself on the horse. I'm not even touching you. You're getting up there all on your own.
This is the reason why I go to aesthetic conferences and do all that kind of stuff and engage with aesthetic philosophers. And the reason why I'm a film critic and all that kind of stuff. And also, I used to be a music critic, not so much anymore. But the point, though, is that there is good art and bad art. And there are levels to it. And just because someone is intrigued by a piece of art doesn't mean that it makes it a great piece of art. And then there's some art that is so terrible that no one is impressed with it at all. And you got to have standards. You got to have standards.
I don't deny any of that, but I think the primary thing is what you are actually experiencing out of it. And if I didn't like a movie that you liked, then maybe I'll question, oh, maybe I just wasn't in the right mood. Maybe I need to watch five other movies.
Or maybe I'll ask you, what's wrong with you? Because this is clearly a bad movie. That happens all the time. Like, if
your point
of
view is shit.
I'm like, if we're watching The Terrifier, right? And you're like, oh, this movie is great. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? This movie is so disturbing. Like, I'm sorry.
This is not a real example, Mary, just so you know. This is exactly the kind of thing that I think we both agreed. This exists. I do not endorse it, but I did experience it.
Yeah.
And I'm not terribly recommending people against it who might be into that kind of thing.
And the people who like it a whole bunch, I wonder about their sanity. I legitimately wonder, because that stuff is disturbing.
So back to the Buddhist slap, Zen Buddhist slapping you example, I think is the ultimate of two forms of philosophy. I'm going to write this down in a semi-scientific way in a book so that everybody can evaluate it and they can all see that the logic goes through, and they can, if they want to object to it, then they can say exactly what part they object to, and the literature can keep moving forward and we can keep advancing as a species. Versus one-on-one, I try to evaluate what you need to hear right now. And it might just be you're a good enough person to go through this. Or it might be you are too consumed with judging yourself. And I just would say something like I just said about my own approach to self-esteem being a category mistake. People just need things at different times. I'm really impressed that you said, well, for the first 10 sessions, I do that. Like, because that's the point, is that Mary and I meeting with a guest once, that person might change us. They might, you know, they might get us interested in something that we then pursue ourselves. But one meeting once is not going to probably fundamentally change anybody. It could.
I mean, it could. There are some people who, for example, that I've met that have really impacted me, and I've just met them one time or something like that. Sure. But for the rest of us regular human beings out here in the world, it takes time to kind of go through things and to unpack some stuff. And I want to say this real quick, because you just made me think of it, and we're in an improv session. And so let me go on my thing. Here's the thing. The reason why I chose not to do all the boring philosophical writing is because I wrote a few articles and had them published and whatnot, and I discovered nobody read them. Like, no, like maybe 5 people, maybe 10 people read them. But if I publish something that is philosophical, kinda, like I bring my philosophical analysis to something, but I write it for the public, thousands of people read it, right? And so I want to have the biggest impact I could possibly have. And so that's the reason why I'm not writing these philosophical texts that only a niche group of individuals are going to read and kind of engage with. So I completely went left on that. And that's part of the reason why I didn't go forward with PhDs and all that kind of stuff, is because I wanted to talk to the people. I wanted to write to the people and teach people on a basic level. And I find the whole academic way of doing things, where you're kind of pushed to do this research and you're pushed to publish these niche articles and whatnot that literally nobody's going to read. Every now and then, a few people break through. Every now and then they do, right? But the vast majority of these people are kind of toiling in obscurity, writing these articles that ultimately don't mean anything, but it has all this meaning to them. I wanted to write to the people. And so that's the reason why I kind of did that little left turn there. But that's a completely off the topic subject, but I wanted to say it. And so I said it.
It is not off the topic. Obviously, what fascinates me about improv and this whole exercise on this podcast is it seems inherently a, yes, okay, there are certain great improv, Spinal Tap or whatever we just had a episode about on Pretty Much Pop that Lawrence didn't like Spinal Tap.
Hated that movie. Hated that movie. Hated it.
But that's the exception.
Mary, I know that I'm wrong. I know that I'm wrong, Mary. I've gotten so much feedback on that.
I didn't even say anything yet, which is great.
But the look you gave me said everything. You gave me such a dirty look.
And maybe the fact that it was a presentation that does not necessarily explain itself, that does not give you the necessary background, that was a barrier, that this is like a hieroglyphic that you just found from another time. And you were, you know, as you told us that you don't have the necessary background, you said, to have found it funny. Whereas when you're in a room with people, if they're performing on stage to you, or more, performing with you in a thing, then, I mean, there can still be like, we have totally different senses of humor. This is not making sense. This is not working at all. Maybe we have to do this five more times, or however many times. It's never going to work. But it seems there's just something inherently closer to the tutoring, you know, live aspect of teaching to improv, if that makes sense. I'm stretching an analogy here.
Yeah. Can you clarify more what you'd like to get out of me?
She's lost. Please. She has no idea what the hell you're talking about.
I had a couple thoughts, but I'd love to be able to speak more to your point that I only vaguely am getting.
As often happens, I'm not entirely sure what my point is, but it is related.
See, that's why. I can't get a point that, see, but that's actually a great point that, like, I can't get your point if you don't know what your point is. Like, I was picking up on pieces of your point, but I can't get it unless you know.
Well, I know that it's a difference between knowledge transmission and a relationship,
uh-huh.
Right? And all of what we do in improv is like learning to react, learning to... So in that improv scene that we just did, where you dubbed me Snuffles...
Yes.
It took me a second to realize that you were talking about me, because I already had in my mind, I was doing a... I don't know if you guys have seen the TV show Ghosts, but one of the people can see ghosts, but her husband cannot see ghosts.
Yes, I love Ghosts. Oh my God, I love Ghosts so much. Yes.
I've never watched that before.
Actually. It's really good.
There's whole scenes where the husband, who cannot see the ghosts, just has to stand there and wait while the wife talks to all the ghosts. And so I thought that's what was happening, is that Lawrence was talking to his imaginary friend Leroy, and I was going to eventually say, that's really interesting, Lawrence, that you have this imaginary, you know, but like that I could not actually sense the Leroy character. But then she turned, you know, so it took me a second to listen and adjust, because I had some other thing in my head that I had not given you even the faintest hint of.
Yeah. See, there's the thing. Actually, this is great. I'm glad that you're saying this. Thank you for clarifying. This happened last night when I was teaching, that someone had a really great idea, but they didn't say their great idea. So their scene partner endowed them with something else. Like, they came in again, this, I know I used this a couple times and I'll use it again. It's bring a brick, not a cathedral. So if we're in a scene and you already plop down your church, then like now you plop down your church, you haven't actually said anything yet. I endow you with something that the scene needs to keep going. And instead of immediately unwrapping and playing with the gift I gave you of making you Snuffles, you have to go through the mental breakdown of tearing down your cathedral so that you can get to the next brick that I gave you to keep building.
Can I give you guys some feedback, though? I would love to give you guys some feedback. So notice that the imaginary friend's name was Leroy Jenkins, and you guys missed that Jenkins part. I was expecting you, Mary, to bring some 1970s blaxploitation flavor.
Leroy Jenkins.
Like, exactly. Like, some of that. Like, you know, that
she did not feel comfortable doing a fake black accent. She was not going to do that.
Like, come on, Jive Turkey. Like, you know, give me some of that.
Sure. Here's the thing.
Dynamite. You know, that's what I was looking for.
I am very conscious and calculated. You know, it's like a puddle. Maybe think of it in terms of like black ice. No black pun intended.
I was wondering if you were trying to.
I wasn't.
Don't you slip on that black ice,
so,
baby.
So, right, you're about to go, like, step on it.
Why black ice got to be bad? Why you got to call it black ice? Why can't it be white ice? Okay, I'm sorry.
Lawrence, it's not me. It's not me. So if I'm about to go step on that invisible ice, and I think it's only going to be mild, and all of a sudden I slip and I broke my tailbone, I'm very conscious about where I step.
Okay, got you.
And I will say, but I did hear the Leroy Jenkins part, but as soon as I heard the evidence, so a lot of what I do and a lot of what improv is about is like leaping before you know where you're going to land. So as soon as you said imaginary friend, Leroy Jenkins, I didn't even take a breath and I immediately was like, hey,
yeah, you
I'm
went
here.
Into it. Yeah, you went right into it. You did.
So there's two points to that, right? Like that was me trusting my immediate impulse and going into it. And also, in a way, I could say as a coach that my hesitation did not satisfy your gift of you wanting me to be a blaxploitation imaginary friend.
Because that would have been legendarily great.
Well, I'm so sorry to disappoint you, Larence.
Lair? Who the hell is Larence?
No.
It's funny. I was about to say Larry. It's funny because my brain was about to go Larry, but then I know that you're not a Larry or a Lawrence.
If you had called me Larry, I would have cussed you out. Oh my gosh.
She saw the old episode that you were on where I had that as a joke.
You caught yourself. You're right there in the middle.
My synapses were firing, but I was still talking. So it just came out Larence.
I mean, but to be honest, I would have forgiven you. Like, you would have been okay. Mark knows better.
Lawrence Snuffles here. Snuffles has taken over for Mark here. And Leroy Jenkins.
That is not a black accent.
Leroy Jenkins right here was telling me. So is it okay to do a black accent if you just can't do a black accent?
Yeah, just let it go, man.
Leroy Jenkins here was saying that Hitler had some good ideas. What do you think about that, Leroy Jenkins?
See, that's the kind of gift that you don't give to Mary. I've learned.
Yeah.
Leroy Jenkins is currently unavailable.
Yeah.
Please leave a message.
Leroy Jenkins has been canceled. Sorry.
Clearly, he's out of here. Goodbye.
Merry Christmas. Hitler did not have good ideas.
Merry Christmas. What was our greeting card? What was our greeting card? This gift is shit? Or I no, fuck this gift, like, I like fuck, it?
Yeah, that's it. That's what it was.
It was like, fuck you, I like this gift. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Hey, guys. I'm so honored to be on the Christmas episode. And, fuck you, but Merry Christmas.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. I should tell my soul. Bankrupt.
Thanks for listening to Philosophy vs. Improv. As a special Christmas treat, we have made our post-game segment, normally restricted to paying supporters, free on our Patreon channel, patreon.com/philosophyimprov. Go check it out, and Merry Christmas.